I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard, and I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down, really. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
We want to thank Factor for sponsoring Play Retro. Factor delivers delicious, fresh, never frozen meals that are ready to heat and eat in 2 minutes. Head to factormeals.com/retro50 and use the code retro50 to get 50% off your first box.
Hey man, get portable. Get a Game Gear Supersonic Sports Pack, a color portable Game Gear, carrying case, and two hit games. Sonic 2 and the Majors Pro Baseball. Whoa, even save 50 bucks. The Game Gear Supersonic Sports Pack. You know who makes it.
Coffee? Tea?
Sega!
What?
That's one of my favorite uses.
What is coffee tea?
Coffee tea Sega, man.
Okay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Play Retro. This is where we talk about old, old video games. And I'm Scott Johnson. And I'm going to be on the bus for 15 minutes, so I'm taking my Sega Game Gear and one game and 18 AA batteries. I'm pretty sure I can beat half this first zone of Sonic before it's off to Kmart for another battery.
Oh, you went to Kmart. Let's see where I went. And I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway, and I have another battery-based quip. Hey, 1990s Radio Shack wants to know what I plan on doing with this 100-pack of AA batteries. Well, Poindexter, that's what we used to call nerds. I'm going to power my 8-bit imagination and fail 10th grade math. Everything is going to be just fine until I stop using my Game Gear and go in and then, you know, Radio Shack goes out of business. Coincidence? I think not. Damn you, Death Adder battery eater of the 8-bit handhelds.
Yeah, this thing. Big old battery chomping monster pooper.
Sega Game Gear.
But we like the Sega Game Gear, and it was actually more successful than any of you think, okay?
Yeah.
More than most of you don't know that thing sold enough to be considered a successful console by any measurement, except it was being measured against the freaking Game Boy, which was not fair. It wasn't fair.
It wasn't fair. There was nothing like the Game Boy before the Game Boy, and it was a beast, and it was just doing its thing, ripping up the place.
That's right. We'll talk more about it here coming up on Play Retro. Before we do, it hit me today, or as I like to say, it hit me yesterday because I wrote this yesterday.
Oh, okay.
We're a day late. You guys probably noticed. Day late. Anyway, but not a dollar short, because here's what I realized. A lot of times I'll talk about games right here on the show that are from 2004, and I consider those to be, for the most part, retro games. So when I think of GBA games or whatever, a lot of those came out around then. And so I think of that time as kind of a retro thing. And then it occurred to me that World of Warcraft came out in 2004. Do I consider World of Warcraft a retro game experience? And at first I went, well, of course not. It's still a living, breathing game that goes on today. But then it hit me after that. People are playing World of Warcraft Classic. Why would that even exist if it wasn't considered classic, aka retro? So I think 04 is okay, is what I'm getting at.
I think we're teetering right there on the edge of what we consider play retro when we talk about things like that. Usually, in my own personal opinion, I usually look and go, oh, what major technology was missing from this system. Like we talk about the Dreamcast, and is still, we consider that retro, and it's pretty close to bumping up to that time era.
Yeah.
And I go, well, you know, it didn't have any network connectivity. There was no online purchasing of software. You still were buying discs. We had a huge leap after that, right? And yeah, so I'm like, I consider that to be retro. You know,
someone in the chat room made a point here. I believe it's correct. It says it is not a time based thing. Says Coffee Scroll, right. It is a moving target.
Yes, yeah. And it's kind of like that too, because part of us, when we talk about retro, what we're really talking about for us is nostalgia, and nostalgia really usually hits when you're like, oh, remember when I was 8? And you're usually about 28, 30 when you start realizing that you miss your childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you've been, and you start going, oh, yeah, remember that? Remember that?
Yeah.
And, yeah, so.
You can't help it.
It is a moving target.
So we are saying, so the Wraith says, is Halo retro? If we're saying 04 can be retro, sure. Because 2000 can be retro? Sure. Why not? For somebody somewhere.
And will that be a generation? Because, you know, each generation has its own, you know, definitions of stuff like this. This isn't like hardcore, like cars. We have like classifications that definitely right. say, okay, this many years. But that's because that stuff has to be taxed in a certain way. So you got to be very clear on, you know, where it sits.
Yeah.
We're just shooting shit here and talking.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, we don't require anything to be an absolute definition, right?
No, you can guarantee we're going to talk about old stuff. Next week is very old. We'll talk about that coming up. But
maybe we should rename ourselves to Play Nostalgia. Would that make everybody happy?
No, fine. I hate that name. I'm never doing that.
I hate the word nostalgia.
Nostalgia sounds like myalgia. It sounds like something someone has right. and shouldn't want, you know?
Well, how about Play Remember When?
Play Remember When.
Nope, going to play to retro. See,
play member
just proved our point. Play member, play member.
I mean,
well, anyway, bills. Brian, I heard, speaking of Game Gears, somebody sent you an old crappy one, and you have to fix it. What's going on there?
That's right. Well, don't talk about it being crappy. It just needs a little tender love and care. Sega Game Gear was sent to me by Jay, aka Satan Slurpee. You may see him around the different retro the communities we have with Frog Pants as well as Mission Deep, and sent me it to me. And it is a fixer upper, as a lot of equipment is that would have been from this time period, because we had a real capacitor quality issue during that time. And typically what happens to these, if you get a Game Gear and there's either not sound or the screen is lined, which is what this one does, that it's got the line screen, no sound when you put the batteries in, then it's probably gonna be caps replaced. And when I say caps replaced, I mean all of them. There's like I think there's like 14 to 20 or something. So we got to break this thing open.
What card is that, by the way? What is in the back of that?
That's what I was going to show you. This looks like this is the Sonic 2, Hedgehog 2. And it says,
was that good? I don't remember if that was good. I remember. I'm not sure
because I didn't. Out of the ones we played this week, I did not play this one.
I did play 2. 2's music was familiar to me when I was playing it earlier, and I went, I played 2, and didn't go bother to see if I'd played 1. But my memory is it wasn't the best Sonic game ever. It was okay.
Right. But it's in here, baby, and we're gonna take a look and see if we can fix it. Oh yeah, I also printed this too. Not to talk about my 3D printing experience.
Yeah,
I printed.
Can't
out
have a week
Game
without
Gear
Brian
stand.
Talking about his 3D print. Oh, look at this! Look at that
Game Gear stand. Hooks right into the back there. Yeah, just burp and it stands up just like a Steam Deck. That's right. This is like a Steam Deck for the olden times.
What's the resolution on that thing? It's like 125 by something.
Yeah, it's like 166 by 120 or something. Don't quote me on that. It's something really low. It's 4x3 screen. So. Yeah, something like that, like 160 by 120 or something.
Yeah, it's real small.
Exactly.
I would love to know
small.
I'd love to know how many Game Gear screens,
right,
at that pixel resolution, matching what current pixel density is. Okay, how many GameCube? Because you would shrink that if it was today. All right, it would be much smaller, little tiny guy. How many of those screens would you need to fill up a 4K monitor or display or TV?
Oh my God, that's a great question.
I would love to do that math.
I'm assuming more than 10.
Someone in our chat, look, somebody in there is like a big math genius whiz. Throw that math down. Get that done.
The race says 42 because that's the answer to everything.
Well,
so that's a smart move.
Yeah, smart move. That's a quick get out of jail card. Anyway, I can't wait to see what you do with it.
What?
And good
there
luck.
There you go. Pixel Rageous in the chat room says 160 by 144. And you owe something in okay. that range. So thank you very much.
So 160 wide. And you would times that by whatever.
144 pixels.
What you do is you would take four. What is the actual resolution of 4K? It's like 32.
Oh, you're still doing your math for the thing. I got you.
That's what I want. I don't care about the
it's
actual.
Gonna, it's going to get real complicated because you know, 4K is a 16 by 9 format, and this is a 4 by 3, right? Or close
You don't have to scale them up. You just have to put them all end by end. Like, how many of those end by end would make the entire screen? And if you take your 4,000, 3840 by 2160 is 4K resolution. Even though it says 4K, it's really just under 4,000.
Right.
You take that 3840. So I'll do this. Here we go.
You got math.
I'm going to do math right now.
Divide that by the ones. Or the ones
by the 160, right? Divided by 160 width. Oh, shoot. Oh, my camera's doing the glitch again. Sorry, chat. I don't know what's causing that. Whatever that is, it keeps coming and going, and hopefully it'll all go away soon. Okay, let me do that again. 3840 divided by.
While you do that, I'm going to look up how many.
360
gears.
360 Game Gears across. Think, Brian, that's a lot of Game Gears across, man. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I agree. I agree. That may be too many Game Gears. I don't think there's that many caps in the world to do that many cap replacements.
It's more Game Gears across than one might think. Anyway, I'm going to leave it on this screen, everybody, just in case.
Well, I'm hoping they don't upscale it. I hope they just blow the pixels all up, right? I hope it's just giant, one big screen. Yeah. Perfect.
Also, F you, internet today. What is going on? Okay, doesn't matter. Everybody at home, we do a live stream when we do the show. So if you're listening to the show, you're like, what the heck are you guys complaining about? Got some kind of weird glitch going on today. Don't know what it is. Haven't had it.
It's weird. It's like the packets are being throttled. It doesn't even like it's something local. It looks like it's something that's between you and Twitch, maybe.
It could be. But might be Twitch. I don't know. Anyway. So that is a lot of Game Gear screens across your 4K TV. That was the point I was trying to get out there.
Right.
All right.
That would have Ethan Suppley asking a question.
So weird, that commercial. Oh, yeah, I should explain this thing here.
Coffee, tea.
So that commercial that I played at the intro was set on an airplane where a guy had a Sega Genesis and a television in his lap. And then he had an extension cord that ran from him down the aisle of the plane, out the plane's door, out the door, and all the way down to Earth, plugged in so he could play his game. He could play his Genesis.
Makes sense.
At one point, he's gotten too high in the air, and the cable pops out. So our very realistic scenario so far, guy can't play his Genesis in this plane. So the stewardess or somebody walks by and gives him a Game Gear. And that's all fine and good. But at the very end, the way this thing ends is the lady,
hey, man, get portable.
Whoops, wherever she went.
Coffee, tea.
So she literally says that. She leans over like you would a flight attendant. And you go, coffee, tea. And then she yells Sega with her eyes getting all bulged out. It's fantastic.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that commercial in forever, but I think I know what you're talking about now. Yeah, that freaked me out.
It's real good.
Keep nightmare for days.
Yeah, yes. It's very, very good. All right. Well, speaking of Game Gear, let's do more.
Shall we play a game?
We indeed shall. Let's talk about Game Gear games, at least the exclusives we think are the most playable even today.
I had some fun this past week. I did too, dude.
I was so shocked how much fun I had with these Game Gear games because, I mean, look, I had one. I enjoyed it. I maybe owned four games for it in the lifetime of the damn thing. And I had the TV tuner and some other stuff we'll talk about. But, you know, I don't have like a memory that everything was amazing and that there was no better experience. And I don't know why I have this fondness, right? You bought it
like when it launched, right?
Yeah. I bought it launch day, went out and got it.
Yeah. Look at you. That's what I always love about you, man. You've always been the launch day guy. I'm always the, let's just wait and see.
Yeah. That's why you'll retire comfortably and I'll never have any money in the bank. Because I like to go, I like to go to Software Etc. and be there at 6 a.m. and then wait for a dumb Game Gear to get released. Is what I do.
Right. I was waiting for the Game Gear. I was like, let's just see how this plays out. All the prices are dropping. Time to go get me a Sega Game Gear. And that's exactly what I did. But I also did that with the game titles, which means also I had a very small library, as you did as well.
Yeah. And I don't think that means anything about your. Anything else about you that you had a small library?
No,
it's not a
usual. No, I just got to have a small library and a small mind for
there,
it to fit.
There you have it. But anyway, I really liked it, but I guess I'm a little surprised by the quality of the games these many years later, because it's easy to have a lot of nostalgia brain and go, well, of course that was awesome. I played it. And then you play it now and you're like, oh boy, this didn't hold up very well. In this case, there are a bunch of games that like legit hold up, and I found myself just keep playing them. I was like, oh, have I played this for 2 hours? How did that happen? It's only like a four-hour game. I'm halfway done.
No shade on the Game Boy at all. Game Boy is a classic. However, I got to say, I found myself thinking lots of times, I'm like, these games seem to be more playable out of the ones I've sample tested than my memory of the Game Boy, not the color.
No.
The Game Boy.
Never the color.
The original.
Yeah.
Right. Not the color and not the advanced, but the original Game Boy. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. Isn't that weird?
We'll probably have to visit a full episode of Game Boy to prove me wrong, but I just kind of feel that way.
Yeah. I kind of do too. And looking back now, it's harder for me to spin up a Game Boy game and enjoy it for mostly reasons that especially if I'm doing the black and white stuff, I just don't think it looks good.
Yeah. Yeah. I always end up colorizing mine. I'll find a palette for it if I do it.
Yeah.
And it feels like the games are simpler. But you know what? It's really hard when people compare the Game Boy to the Game Gear, because Nintendo just dropped it and said, you know what? We think people would like an extension of what we were doing with like the Game & Watch or whatever they were doing. And they said, we would like to dig deeper, right? Mm. And so they did that. And nobody was even thinking handhelds, really.
No.
Like Tiger or something, maybe. I don't know. But anyway. And then Game Gear's like tried to answer everything, all the complaints about the Game Boy, but they also had to go to $150 price point as opposed to the $89.99 price point of the Game Boy, which had a 40 hours worth of battery life or something compared to the Game Gear's four for six AA batteries or something.
Yeah. And again, like at that era anyway, 11 million units is a success. The Game Gear was a success, but when you're dealing with a competition that hit over 100 million,
100 million.
I mean, that's insane. You got to remember the Sega Master System only sold 20 million worldwide.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and that's what this was too. If you didn't know the Game Gear, unlike the Nomad was the portable Genesis, the Game Gear was the portable Master System, and you could buy the card adapter and you could play all of your Master Systems. And I say you can play all your Master Systems. That's a broad stroke. I don't know if you could play absolutely every one of them, but you could. Most of them were supposed
to be. Most of them worked, yeah. I think most of the ones that mattered worked anyway. But think of this. Look at it in these terms. That means the Game Gear sold more than the Dreamcast did. More actual consoles sold than Dreamcast.
Yeah. 10 million for Dreamcast, something like that.
Yeah, just shy of it. PS Vita, PlayStation Vita was right around the same amount, around 11 million. Like, I guess what I'm saying is don't poo-poo the Game Gear. The thing was like legit.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first. In fact, of all the people who tried to dethrone my Nintendo and chip them down a few pegs, they're the only ones that came anywhere close.
Yeah,
in the handheld market. So I don't know, man. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk about the Atari. We hear you, Atari Lynx fans. We hear you. We hear you. Your Turbo. What is the Turbo Express or whatever for the NEC? We hear you. We know. We're gonna get to those.
Yeah.
But today we're celebrating the Game Gear.
That's right. I'm going to do something to just test my screen here, though, because we're still a little choppy. So chat room,
a little choppy.
Ignore this. You're going to see the Adventure Club video. I just want to see if it actually keeps happening and see if maybe it's something to do with my overlays, because I don't know what's going on.
It could be. It could be.
Don't know. All right. Let's get to this one. None of this music really matters all that much, but this matters. Sega! The version of the Sega intro on the Game Gear sounded like garbage shit. How terrible is that? It's really bad. right?
Well, once again, that was something that came that particular intro didn't come out until the Genesis era, right? Am I misremembering that?
Well, Genesis version did it first, and then they down sampled it to the
Game Gear. Fit on that Master System processor there. Ooh, boy,
yeah, it's bad, right? Really bad. Listen to that. Like, is that even, that's not normal.
But, you know, you're listening to it through that little speaker. Maybe you don't notice it as much. Maybe it's, you know, You're outside, it's noisy.
Sure.
You know, it's, you're back inside looking for more batteries. You know,
it's all those things and more. All right, I'm going to do this. Okay, we've come back. Sorry, everybody. Weird glitch. I think we're okay now.
I told you we shouldn't try to run this episode on a Game Gear.
Yeah, see, this is the problem. Those double A's aren't going to help us at all either. Anyway, okay, so we're back at it. I don't know where we were, but we're going to play this music from Axe. Oh, we were talking about this. The only thing I want to say about it is actually very impressive that an 8-bit machine with a very inferior sound chip.
Yes.
Even the Genesis one was nothing to write home about. But the fact that little crappy chip in that Game Gear could poop that out and have it sound sort of like the iconic sound, I'll give it some credit for that. It's fine.
And I have all kinds of looked at that stupid sound card because I've got to replace about 4 caps on that thing.
Yeah.
And it's pretty small and it's done the job. It got it done.
Yeah. Gets her done. What's his name says, Larry the Cable Guy, who's not really him. Anyway, hey, here's some music. Kind of got a cool sound to it. This right here is the music to a little game called Axe Battler, a Legend of Golden Axe game, or a Legend of Golden Axe. There's no game at the end. 1991, this game came out, and I did not play it in the day, but I played it yesterday, and you know what? It's all right.
It's not bad as far as parts of the game. I wasn't crazy about the actual battles at first. Because there's 3 modes in this game, the Axe Battler. You can there's like this exploratory part, but then you have like these random encounters.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you can actually encounter stuff on purpose. But the encounters are probably the weakest part of this whole game. Because they're
it's not my favorite.
If you get hit like even one time, which your reach is longer than everybody else, because you're the Axe Battler, right?
Yeah.
Then you get knocked out. But if you enjoyed, you know, golden axe wear, anything like that, then this is good. The golden axe is good.
It's all right. It's it's turn based, kind of random encounters, like you said. There's also a kind of a 2D platformy walking bit that reminds me a lot of Zelda 2. They're going for a couple of things here, I think, and I think it succeeds mostly at the combination of things it's trying to do. It's not the worst game you're going to ever spend your time with. I was impressed with it because I just didn't expect anything from it, and I actually kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So it made me wonder why Sega didn't do more with Golden Axe as an offshoot for other game types.
Right.
Because we've talked about that before. What was the other one we liked so much in the Zelda?
Golden Axe Warriors.
Yeah, which was, that was awesome.
The other one we talked about. That was pretty darn cool. Yeah. And this game, we're going to talk about this a lot while we're talking about the Sega Game Gears. We know this is a really small screen. We mentioned it at the top of the show, 160 by 144.
Yeah.
And the screen, I think, is like 5 inches or something. So if you imagine most of your cell phones today and like you like half the screen, you turn it sideways and half the screen, you're getting pretty close to the screen size. So if the sprites were large and legible, like they'd have to be at least like almost an eighth of the screen in size. And that's one of the great things about Golden Axe are all those great big fat characters they usually have.
Yeah.
And so I thought it looked pretty good.
Well, the original Game Boy resolution was, let's see, I'm just doing a comparison here. The Game Boy, it's much smaller, right?
Yeah, it's like 80 by...
Oh, here it is. Oh, no, it wasn't bad. 160 by 144.
Oh, so it's the same.
Oh, yeah,
so it's the same as the, just it wasn't in color. And so.
It's a little slower, too. I noticed there was a lot of tearing and kind of jerkiness to Game Boy games that tried to do a lot of scrolling and stuff. And it felt like the Game Boy or the Game Gear had a better handle on that. Same as the Genesis.
It's different. I haven't dug deep into the Game Boy screen, but it's definitely different technology because the Game Boy, of course, not being backlit or front lit unless you actually front lit it yourself from an external device.
Yeah.
Whereas the Game Gear course was backlit. It's, I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah. It's a cool game, though. Worth checking out. There's also this one that I actually think is close to my favorite. Anyway, here it is.
Oh.
Yeah, very close. Not quite my favorite, but we'll get into why I think that it's pretty good. This game is called Crystal Warriors. Brian's got a... is that a comic? What is that?
This is... I got confused. So there's a comic that I love. It's called Crystar, okay. Crystal Warrior. And when I saw this, when I saw this game was on our list of exclusive titles for the Sega, I was like, they made a Crystal Warrior game because it is also about elements, right? It's elements and it's fantasy and everything I was reading. I was like, oh my God, this has got to be the same. It's not the same.
It's not the same, is it? It's different.
It's not the same.
Well, this one, if you are a fan of the Nintendo titles or the Fire Emblem titles from Nintendo, then this will be immediately accessible to you because it's a turn-based tactical strategy RPG. Yeah. And it's a good one, in my opinion. I think this is pretty strong stuff. It reminds me of playing Fire Emblem or even Advance Wars. It's sort of that similar thing. You take turns. It's all turn-based, which I'm a big fan of anyway. I think the actual combat screens are a little boring and dumb. Just because they take a while.
Backgrounds in them we've seen, but you get all your stats there. The animations are hilarious whenever they come up and they attack each other. You can have start out with 6 adventurers. You can get up to 9.
Yep.
There is a permadeath in this game. There's a lot of things going on in this game that I thought that they did it really well. Like, there's also like a little bit of fog of war where you don't know who the enemy is unless you use one of your spellcasters to scan them, and then you kind of know better because they know how to position tactically. You know, where do you want to put your healer at? You want to put him in the back? Where do you want to put your archer or different classes? Where you want to place them at?
Sure.
But man, yeah, this one blew me away with that and the fact that you would go from one, you would start with your castle and you'd go over to another castle and you'd enter that town, but you'd encounter enemies along the way. Then once you get into the other side, you can shop around, upgrade your equipment, reorganize. But once again, like I said, you got that permadeath, man.
Yep.
You might like one of your buddies and he's just dead and you'll never see him again.
Yeah, no, it's a cool game. I also like that you can tame animals along the way, but unlike a lot of games where you have animal taming, they don't actually have to fight if you don't want them to, but you can.
Right.
They can be part of your battles, which is
cool. That was way cool. I was curious about that because when I first started encountering things, the first thing you encounter when you play this game is animals. And I thought, oh, I'm going to be fighting against enchanted animals who are pissed. All right, cool. Yep, and I'm like, no, okay. So it kept saying tame. And I'm like, oh, wait, am I going to tame these characters? So sure enough, if that character tames an animal, he can then choose to play or not play in battle. Pokemon, get out there and
take that.
Do it.
Pocket monsters. It's cool. Came out in 1991, and I think is the most accessible of these, maybe. But that again, I have a bias toward this game type, so I'm kind of a sucker for it.
Yeah, I think, and I just played a lot. So there's also a Japanese only follow up to this. It's like, was it Stone Battler or something like that? I've actually played it before. Japanese only release, but there is a fan. Translation for that. What's it called? Is it it's something like that? It's like stone.
Stone brisket. Stone
brisket. Destroy them with lasers.
Yeah, just stone briskets. That's it.
Stone hedges. Stone.
I don't know.
Stone. I'm gonna keep stalling for time.
How come we never got it? Because it was the Game Gear dead by then. They'd given up.
Probably this. Yeah, I don't know. We shouldn't be because this was 91 when this first one came out. I think it was 92 or so when the second came out. Where the crap is it?
Wonder why we didn't get
Royal
it.
Stone. It was the Royal Stone, which sounds like a great band, doesn't it?
Doesn't. Yeah. Cool. Welcome to the stage, Royal Stone, performing their rendition of "Hey, we're an old, we're a Japanese thing that didn't make it to America."
I think you nailed it, though, because the Japanese-only sequel, Royal Stone, wasn't published until 95, and that was pretty much the end, where Sega was just really working with a few developers and just going, hey, come on, please, we just got to get a few more out there. Come on, man, just work
with
us.
What was I doing in 95 for handhelds? Probably still sort of messing with my Game Gear, but I think I had probably moved on to one of the newer pocket editions of the Game Boy or something.
Right, right.
At that probably stage. So. Yeah. But that's kind of when Nintendo was, or sorry, Sega was about to get weird.
It was all about to get weird.
Yeah, things were getting weird at Sega. But then came a game in 1992 that I don't remember at all. All right? I'm going to play a little music from that thing, too. Oh, boy, that one will go right to your soul. The Game Gear was good at this fake echo music.
Right.
Creating the sense of an echo. Anyway, that game is called Defenders of Oasis. And it is a very traditional Japanese-style RPG.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it says its story's based on 1001 Nights, but it right. just it didn't strike me as anything too close to that. It just felt...
No, it was set in that kind of that world. So you got your like Beyond Oasis type games, Defenders of Oasis in this case, with you know, set in those different settings of 1001 Nights stories. Overhead perspective, little command base. You'll notice a couple of early on, it seemed like the really good games seemed to be the, you know, the RPG, JRPGs, because you know they were specifically trying to attack Nintendo, who was doing very well at these.
Yeah. This was a Final Fantasy attempt sort of thing. That's what this game was. Yeah.
And I thought this one was okay. I played this one. It is very solid. The graphics look amazing. Probably better than Crystal. Even though I love Crystal Warriors, it was kind of disjointed. Some of the graphics were kind of, you know, in typical fashion. Some of it was cutesy and some of it was more serious. But it didn't seem to match. Even the characters' outfits didn't even have the same colors. It was just weird, but this one, it's nailed the RPG.
Yeah, I agree. Classic. I think it looks way better than a handheld, an 8-bit handheld deserves to look. It surprised me. But a lot of that stuff, you know, those trappings are there. Like, oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, the characters and the dialogue and all that, that's where this game really shines. The dialogue is so quirky.
Mm.
But it just kind of works, and it kind of makes you endeared to the character. You kind of endear themselves to you. They kind of, I'm like, oh, okay, I like this guy now, even though he's kind of goofy.
I do. As a general rule, I don't love random encounters, and this game is chock full of those.
Yeah.
But it's no worse than any other JRPG. So
I think this is the one. Yeah. And the good thing about this one, this is the one that does the, was it Crystal or was it this one that you only had? No. Okay. I'm thinking of Crystal Warriors. I did like Crystal Warriors. That was my favorite combat because you didn't have to defeat. You would just go like two rounds in a random encounter and then you would go back to overworld. Here you're once again.
Yeah.
Traditional Japanese RPG.
Yeah.
Battle till you get out or run.
Yeah.
Don't run.
A little grindy if you're into that sort of thing. Yeah. You already know what you're getting into. So recommended for those people. I think, and you're right.
So dialogue. If you were thinking that you're I'm an RPG fan, Sega's not got nothing for me. Look at the Game Gear titles. You might find yourself a few gems.
Yeah. More than I think you probably know at this stage.
Right.
Let us talk about our friends at Factor friends. You might call them. You want to get America's number one ready to eat meal kit and start saving some time. Well, this year you've got goals. It's only February. It's early. Factor is here to help you achieve each and every one of those goals. Fuel up fast with ready-to-eat nutritious meals delivered straight to your door, leaving you time and energy to tackle everything you've got on that huge to-do list. You can get that number one American ready-to-eat meal kit and start saving time, eating well, and living your best year yet. Head to factormeals.com/retro50 and use the code retro50 to get 50% off your first box. I like everything I've ever had from Factor. In particular, they have a fish meal that just blew my mind. And I think fish is hard to do right, you know? But I fired that up, ate it, and went, wait a minute, this is amazing. You might do that as well. Factor is now owned by HelloFresh, so there's something for everyone. I love switching between the brands, and, well, now you can enjoy both brands at a discount. Too busy to cook with Factor? Skip the trip to the grocery store and skip the chopping, the prepping, the cleaning up. Never frozen. It's always fresh. And these meals are ready to eat in about 2 minutes. All you have to do is heat it up and enjoy it. Anybody can do that stuff. With 34 chef-prepared, dietitian-approved weekly options, there's always something to try. Plus, you can get, a meal rounded out and replenished with the snacks you like the most. They have an assortment of 36 plus sweets, smoothies, juices, and more satisfying add-ons. Mm-mm. Also, if you're eating vegan or veggie, it's fine. It's a snap with Factor because each meal is prepared by chefs and approved by dietitians. So you know your Factor meal has all the ingredients you want and nothing you don't. And if you don't, I don't know, feel like, you, let's say you don't want to be normal. You want to mix things up. Well, you can add a protein to whatever you want. Just select the vegan plus veggie meal each week. Whatever you want to do, get Factor and enjoy clean eating without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door, ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Achieve and maintain your 2023 goals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/retro50 and use the code retro50 to get 50% off your first box. That's code retro50 at factormeals.com/retro50 to get that 50% off your first box. Now, let's get into the action. The action people want to hear from us, right?
They because there's no more. That's it. That was all the RPG action I think we were even talking about today. I think everything else is,
it's all pretty straightforward.
Everything else is action.
I was a big Shinobi fan, and you could play Shinobi 2, The Silent Fury on this device, and it sounded a bit like this. Oh, intriguing ninja bullshit happening with the song. Anyway, this is as nondescript as that music is. This is another edition of Shinobi, and in this case, I want to read what you pulled from the Wikipedia. I love this description.
Yeah, I couldn't do better than that. I tried to write our own thing, but I was like, that's pretty good.
No, this is so good. The evil techno warriors have enlisted the Black Ninja, master of ninja techniques, to help them take over Neo City. This evil syndicate has captured the four elemental crystals and their guardian ninja, Joe Muhashi. Musashi has to rescue four fellow ninja and retrieve their corresponding elemental crystals before the final showdown against the evil Black Ninja in his castle.
Ooh. How can I do better than that? That was, I will give some serious props to the Wikipedia writer, author of the GG Shinobi 2.
That might be in the manual or something. I don't know. Maybe
it could be.
Could be. It's entirely possible. But if you like Shinobi, you'll probably like this. My only complaint about Shinobi 2, I think it's very fun. It's a workable, serviceable action side scroller. There's not nearly chucking enough shurikens in the game.
Yeah. There's none of that right away. This is not your typical Shinobi. Like my go to game on my Master System was absolutely Shinobi. Anytime I could get some Shinobi in, I was getting the Shinobi in. But this was a little bit different because you were unlocking or rescuing ninjas so that you could progress in different areas, and you could choose to start wherever you wanted to, except for the final level.
Right.
And you could fight in different areas, like you'd fight in the woods or on the docks.
Remind me of the first Mega Man where you could choose your choose your starting level, basically.
Right.
You know, it was non-linear.
Factory right now.
Yeah. Look at him fighting these guys. Look at this. Chop, chop.
It's good. And it's just like Shinobi now. Don't get worried. It is still a Shinobi because it's easy to die. You only have like 3 health bars to start with. I think you can increase that, or maybe the different ninjas have it. I'm not sure because I do it.
You know what sucked is the boxes that had bombs in it. Those pissed me off, those bombs.
Oh, yeah, I didn't understand the bombs. Why is there a bomb in a lot of these boxes? I'm like, is it so that I can hit it and then walk away and then the enemy will walk over top of it? Nope, it's just there to piss me off, like you said.
Yeah, the pacing's not, you know, Shinobi 3 on the Genesis is really the high point of the Shinobi series, in my opinion. Yeah. So if you really want to go nuts and play Shinobi, that's the game to play. But if you want to check this one out just from a historical sort of, hey, this existed sort of perspective, I think you can have a good time. It's all right.
Yeah. We're going to say that in a couple of instances here where we're going to go like, why would you get the 8-bit version of this experience when you get a 16-bit version of this elsewhere?
Yeah.
Right? Why would you do that? And this is not the same game they had on the Genesis, but, if it's still kind of all the same. It's all just Shinobi.
Sure.
Slice, job. Don't die.
Yeah, don't die. If you can help it, try not to die. That's the rule of the game. Right. Now, if you're sitting there going, man, I was a Nintendo guy and I had all the Castlevania I could eat. It's all I wanted to play. Well, good news, because there was Master of Darkness.
No.
Master of Darkness, Brian.
Yes, and Brian shoved this one in here, whether Scott wanted it or not. I shoved this in last second, so if he wants to call me out for putting this piece of crap in here,
no, it's fine. I actually kind of like this game. I played it as well. Well, actually, I saw it in the notes and last minute played it because I didn't know about this one, and I went, oh, wait a minute, what is this? It really is. They're trying to be Castlevania clone.
Yeah.
The only difference is a dude in a suit.
It's so hilarious.
But he's still whipping... You know, it's still like bats are coming at you.
Imagine Castlevania, but you're playing as a gentleman and you're in London and you're actually playing as Ouija board obsessed psychologist. I forget what his name is. Anyway, he's trying to find he thinks that Count Dracula is murdering people. In the guise of being Jack the Ripper. Turns out, spoiler, it is Jack the Ripper who is killing the people, but he's doing them as blood offerings so that he can resurrect Dracula.
Oh, okay. Great.
So this story is freaking wild. If you want to play a gentleman with a cane going, traveling across London during, Jack the Ripper time, and trying to revive Dracula, this is a game for you, man.
Yeah.
It made me laugh. It was hilarious.
It's a goofball. The story's goofball as hell. Again, it is, I mean, I say Castlevania clone. It does have its own story. It's its own story.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's side-scrolling, go up steps, use a whip thing. It looks like a cane, but it's really a whip. You know what I mean? Like, it's Castlevania. It really is.
Now, there are bats in this thing, but they're not nearly as annoying as the bats in Castlevania. Instead, they replaced that job with these dumb dogs that you can't... Because this is, once again, we're the Game Gear, so it's a 4x3 screen, and the sprites are pretty big. And so as soon as you step into a frame, the screen will scroll, and then a dog come running at you. And there's no time to react because he's 2 inches away from you. And you hit you every freaking time.
It also looks like you're fighting against a bunch of Batmen,
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's another gentleman, I believe.
Yeah, there's more than just you. You're not the only gentleman. You are amongst a distinguished group of gentlemen in this game.
Right. But I just couldn't believe this game. I was just flipping through the games on my Mr. FPGA, which is how I played most of these this week. And I saw that title and I was like, oh, Master of Darkness, what is that? And I clicked on it and I was like, oh my God, this is freaking hilarious. I love it. And I looked, and sure enough, it was one of those exclusives. So I was like, okay, I'm down then. Sign me up.
Well, here's what you need. You need in your life, you need a little bit of a stupid fox. Pretty jaunty and good for the kids. Probably a little less hardcore of a story than Gentleman Killing Vampire deal. But that game would be one I played back in the day and tried again now and actually was surprised how much I still enjoyed it. It's Tails Adventure, a spinoff from Sonic from 1995. It is before he meets Sonic. So this is before he becomes an indentured slave to the freaking hedgehog.
This is when Tails was just enjoying his life. Swishing his tail about, and in no hurry to either, because Tails gets in no hurry in this not Sonic game.
No, he's a slow. It's a slow burn. I mean, it's still a what do you call it? It's a scrolling platformer, but
yeah, it's but action platformer. I think is actually how it's listed. But I mean, if you're signing up thinking, oh, Tails is going to be running along pretty quickly, and flying behind Sonic. No, he's a slow moving. Kind of guy, and I actually, and once my brain accepted it, seeing these Sonic type backgrounds and worlds, I started really enjoying myself.
Well, this is the problem. It didn't sell well, and I think the reason it didn't is because this didn't feature the blazing fast blast processing bullshit of Sonic.
Yeah,
and people were like, "Why am I gonna play that? Then it's not like real Sonic game or whatever. It's stupid.
This is a knockoff. This is dumb."
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It just feels like felt like a really homey, fun kind of game. It reminded me of it's more like a Mario pacing to it.
Yeah, exactly. And, much more Mario pacing, if you can imagine. Mark, except this time, Tails, he likes the gadgets, and we're watching some great footage right now where Tails is in his little Pope Mobile of a drill boat. I don't know. There's a drill boat. Is that what that is?
That is. Some kind of drill submarine. The underwater levels are actually decent because it's this boat you're using instead of him just swimming.
Yeah.
And, yeah. That's pretty cool. But
it's pretty great. And he also gets to drop bombs. It's more of a thinker instead of running, you know, left or right. You gotta solve environmental obstacles and attack the enemy. So
you got these little robots too. He's got these little robots you can send off and do work and hide and stuff. It's a cool game. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. We you say, why didn't y'all just put some Sonic in there? Surely there's a Sonic in your list. Not really. No. Because all the Sonic games, I think there was only two that were exclusive to the Game Gear. And if you were going to play a Sonic game, you might as well just played it.
Yeah, wouldn't you play this? Just something different, you know? Yeah. That takes better advantage, I think, of the hardware. You could never really replicate Sonic on this thing anyway. You could try.
Because it's too fast. Because once again, like we talked about in the game previous to this, Master of Darkness, the sprites have to be so large that it's really hard. It's already hard enough to see Sonic when you're trying to zoom along.
Yeah.
But if you even lessen that screen even smaller and increase the size of Sonic, it gets really difficult to know when you're about to hit something.
Now, you Marvel fans out there probably asking yourselves, if I was presented with the choice to play as either Cyclops or Wolverine, the answer is, why would I ever play Cyclops? Well, good news. There's a game where you can totally do that, and it sounds like this.
That's the 90s X-Men song somewhere, right? That's not the intro song, but it's very much of that theme, right?
It's not that. The opening theme was, how'd it go? Yeah, that whole thing.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, Cyclops sucks in this game, and I don't know why you'd play him. I went and played it and decided to go back and start over with Wolverine, and he's way more fun. So do that.
I thought the same thing at first, too. As a matter of fact, I didn't think that at all because at first I thought you could just play a Cyclops. I didn't realize the opening screen, and you could get back to it as well. Yeah. You can switch between characters. And I was like, oh, you can do that. But if you get your mutant power, a power up, if you hit the start button, I don't know if you figured this out or not. If you hit the start button, you can use his blaster.
Yep.
And so that's what I would do. So it was pretty good for range.
Which it took a while to do because for most of it, you're just punching. You're just kicking dudes, and you're like, wait a minute, Cyclops literally has a high-powered freaking nuke beam built into his eyes. Why aren't we using that? Oh, I have to hit start. Okay.
Yeah, that just hit start, which brings up the mutant power. If you had the mutant power charged up, then you can use it. If not, then you have to wait until you come across some more power-ups. I always kind of, I get it. I'm always mad, though, when they do this with superheroes in video games, especially during this era. Where it's like they don't give them the power ups, they just give them punch abilities. I'm like, get it. Yeah. I get if you had them using their powers all the time, it might be kind of lame, but yeah.
My other complaint is there's too much verticality in the game. I much prefer side scrollers that focus on the side and not the up and down.
Yeah.
This game has got like, I don't know how stacked it is with stuff, but you got to go really high and there's no easy map or anything. So you just don't know where you are 90% of the time. That's my only
complaint. Start out in the mansion where Magneto has kidnapped the other X-Men, who you can unlock. You can play if you're a big fan of like Storm, Rogue, Psylocke, which I don't think you could play in many places before. I think Ibit pointed that out to us the other day when I was talking to him. Mm-hmm. And Nightcrawler and Iceman.
Mm-hmm.
You have to unlock those guys as you go along.
Play them. I can't remember how it works though. Do you have to start over with them or could you continue?
I think you use it at the level start. I'm not 100% sure on that. Don't quote me on that. We played a lot of games this past week and for some reason I played actually two X-Men games.
Did you really?
This one made it to the top.
What was another X-Men Game Gear game? What was it?
It was an exclusive. It was the X-Men Game Masters Legacy, which is, I would say, in some ways, it's more polished.
Okay.
I don't know if it's more fun, but the sprites are fantastic looking. But something about this one just kind of stuck with me, where the other one was kind of like, it looks really good, but something about it just kind of lacked a little bit for me.
Yeah, this one was a little more snappy. I agree with that.
Yeah, a little snappier.
Now, one of the big competition points for handheld game systems at the time was who had Tetris? And the answer was Nintendo had Tetris. That's why. And that's responsible for why that system sold so many. By many accounts, is Tetris was a system seller. It was a killer app, and and
Sega it was the Candy Crush of his time. Everybody had to have it.
Yeah. Think of early Candy Crush when everybody still gave a shit about Candy Crush. You're absolutely right. That's a great way to put it. Tetris still to this day, one of the greatest video games ever made.
Yeah.
It's in the top 10. It's got to be, right?
Oh, like, yeah.
Holy crap. Yeah. You can't beat it. Anyway, these guys said, well, we got a thing. And it's got kind of this intro music that's sort of similar to Tetris, and it's also got backgrounds that look like a city, like a Arabian city, like Tetris. And except now we're dropping gem column things down, and we call it columns. Actually, we're going to call it super columns for this recent version. And
the original columns launched with the Sega Game Gear as a pack-in. This was super columns. I went with this one. Because the other columns made it to a whole bunch of more systems. This super columns kind of lived and died here.
Yeah, didn't go anywhere else. Columns is an interesting thing. It's not quite Puyo Puyo. It's not quite, well, Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine was basically reskinned Puyo Puyo.
Right.
Puyo Puyo, however you say it.
Puyo Puyo, I'm going with what you said.
But columns, oh boy, the person playing here is bad. Well, maybe
it must be me.
Maybe they're good, and I'm giving them not enough credit here, because look at this. Now he's clearing everything out. Anyway, it is not as good as Tetris, but it's an okay puzzle game on its own right. I think Columns is fine. All right, a big healthy F for fine here.
Yeah, this is how I would do it. If you were looking at getting a Game Gear and picking up a couple of games, this is probably going to come free with it. Yeah. Or maybe not Super Columns, but Columns for sure.
Yeah,
you'll get enough joy out of Columns, and then you'll say, "I could just play this on my phone."
Yeah,
like, a million times over.
Yeah, there's a bunch of Columns ripoffs on your phone. There is. Right. There may even be an official Columns on your phone. I'm not actually sure. But none of them are Tetris. That's the key here.
That's right.
Yeah. And I hate, you know, I say that. I say that with no disrespect intended, because I think it's a fun, okay, time killing thing, but it doesn't have the depth. You know, the fact that you can't rotate them.
It's just like the Game Gear thing is like against the Game Boy, it pales. But you know, as a standalone thing, it's fine. It's great.
Yep.
It's fantastic. It does its own thing, and that's fine. Super Columns does its own things. It's not Tetris, and it never will be. But that's fine.
No, it was like having the Tetris L shapes. Imagine having a bunch of those, but with the L part lopped off, and they can't rotate. Enjoy your game.
Yeah. Instead, you can reassemble the stack of colored gems.
Yeah.
Things.
And it columns. Is a different. It's a whole different strategy.
If you didn't know, it's called Columns.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it is called plural columns, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So I guess it is called columns. Okay, my bad.
Well, because you put
one
down.
It's not called rows.
No, it's not called rows.
I want to play a game. I want to play a game called Rose.
Hell yeah, dude. Sega
Dropping
Rose.
Rose down.
I'd be into that. Axel Rose. He would sponsor it. Anyway, that's Super Columns, 1995. Still a cartridge quite easy to find. I looked them up. They're all over the place because, like you said, they were packed in, and the Super one was pretty easy to get. So if you're trying to build your Game Gear collection, you'll have no trouble finding that. You might have trouble, though, finding Arena Maze of Death.
Ooh!
Maze of Death! This is my least favorite of the list. I did not enjoy this
game.
Yeah,
we're getting down to the very end of the Sega Game Gear. There was not going to be many more things coming to the Sega Game Gear.
When I first saw this one, I got excited because I went, ooh, little three-quarter inch dude, or three-quarter view dude, running around, doing cool shit. Nah, he'd mostly just dodging bullets and going screen to screen, and it gets real old. I didn't like it.
Yeah, he's dodging bullets, and all the bullets are Pong-style bullets, so when he shoots, they're like little round balls, and you're fighting against, I guess, are those supposed to be robots?
I don't know what those are, like Terminators or cyborgs or who knows what they
are. I actually ended up playing this longer than I meant to for some reason, and I think it was just because of the exploration aspect of it, because you have to go room to room, and you have to figure out in that room, you have to find a key so that you can open a door to get to the next area. And that's probably the most compelling part of that. The shooting part was just, I got to do this so they'll stop shooting at me so I can continue to look.
Yeah, because you're just looking. That's really what you're doing. You're just
right.
Looking.
It's like, move, I'm trying to look.
From a like a gameplay video perspective, like a graphics perspective, I thought this looked really cool. But I thought the gameplay was just kind of damp. It wasn't great.
Yeah, I think... like we usually see at the end of a lot of these systems when they get near end of life, every enhancement, every shortcut to making a good game has kind of been met, and they can just kind of reproduce that, and they can make a good looking, good running game. Question is, do they make it fun?
Yeah, and that's the hard part, man.
That's the hard part.
It's all right though.
I enjoyed it. Arena of Maze Death we put on here for what and worth playing. It's at least worth checking out.
Yeah, I would check it out. I mean, it's basically Running Man the game without the IP. Yeah. You can always tell when these games are trying to be something they can't, and they can't call themselves that, but they definitely play like that.
Oh, and it's set in the far flung future of 2026.
Oh my lord, really? We have this to look forward to, dude. Oh my hell.
Yeah, I looked at my isometric life of exploring warehouses.
How can we even do it?
And trying to, the thing is, I don't know why the robots had to stand in place, and I think that there was roving robots that drove around, but then there were others that just stood in place. There. I don't understand why they weren't just turrets or
they
something.
Just they stood there. They were basically turrets with legs that wouldn't work.
Yeah. They did. Yeah. The legs were for looks.
Chat's right. Dross in the chat says he's a man and he is running. You're right. He's a running man.
You're right. And he's trying to get to the, he's trying to broadcast something at a TV station or something because we're all brainwashed, blah, blah, blah. Something about social media, whatever.
Yeah. Whatever is right. Okay, whatever. We got some worth of mentions here. I like the Shining Force series, and they made a game called The Shining Force, A Sword of Hygia. Or Hygia? Am I saying that right?
Hygia. Something like that. Hygia? Hygia? H-A-J-Y-A. I'm sure somebody Japanese-speaking individual.
And the reason we didn't include that is the same reason we didn't include Ristar for the Game Gear, which is a pretty good version of that game, because we're going to do Shining Force and Ristar episodes of their own at some point.
They're going to get the love.
They are. Because Ristar in particular, I got to talk about why that game... Still one of my favorite platformers that should have taken off. I don't know what happened. I don't get it.
I don't either. Is it the grabby hands? Is that what's freaking people out?
I like the grabby hands, but I know how you feel about like disembodied grabby hands. I know you're not a fan.
Right.
So I'll have to talk
more about that. Not disembodied. Stretchy's fine. I'm fine with stretchy. That makes sense.
Yeah. Because they connect to the shoulders, but you're saying if they're just floating out there, F that noise.
Yeah. I mean, Mickey Mouse runs on those little rubber legs. I mean, I'm fine with that. But if his rubber legs disappear, I'm like, oh.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. And also, we didn't bring up any of the Disney games. I will tell you, my favorite Game Gear game is actually a Disney game, but it's one that will probably be included in a compilation that we'll do in the future, and that is the Castle of Illusion port for the Game Gear is actually very, very good.
They did really good. Disney was really killing it at about this time. They
had a lot of good stuff. Right. Yep. And they were putting them on everything. You can get your Disney games just about anywhere.
Yeah. You use a lot of action platformers, and they just always seem to work well.
I need to play that new, I don't know if you've touched it, but that Disney, it's kind of Disney Stardew Valley, but it's called something.
Oh, yeah.
People rave about that. That thing's got like ridiculously high reviews on Steam and stuff. I probably just need to grab that piece of work and see what's up. Dreamlight Valley, that's it.
There you go. Nailed it.
I just feel like I'm like, do I really want to play some cutesy Disney game? But everyone's like, dude, it's really fun. You got to play. It's really good.
You better get on it, buddy. How are you talking about it in 20 years if you don't play it now?
It's on Game Pass, which obviously that'd be great. Oh. But it feels like the kind of game I want to play in bed on my Steam Deck. And I don't want to go through. I still haven't gone through the work it takes to get Game Pass xCloud working on my Steam Deck. I need I want a native damn way to do it.
Yeah, agreed.
You know what I mean? Just make it native way. Why can't you freaking do that, Microsoft?
If it ain't RetroArch or Steam built in, I don't mess with it.
KT Anything Data
more,
in the chat.
More complicated.
I trust Kevin. Kevin, send me a link to the easiest way to make that work, because I think I did it the hard way last time.
Yeah.
And it soured me on it. I would much rather do that, I guess. So send me that, will you? All right. Kevin's the man. Sonic the Hedgehog, we talked about 1 and 2, but also there's Triple Trouble. This is the 1994 thing. It has Knuckles in it. It was a sequel to Sonic Chaos, right? The 93 game?
Yeah, Sonic Chaos, and it had the one and only appearance of Knack the Weasel.
Yeah, because he sucked. Don't keep Knack the Weasel around. He sucks. I like Big the Cat.
The
Big
the
Cat,
and
I
the
like.
Weasel goes Knack.
Yeah, remember Big the Cat? Do you remember him? He was cool.
I totally forgot about it. No, geez, what?
Yeah, Big the
Blow
Cat.
Blow my mind right now.
He may have shown up in the Dreamcast adventure game. That may be where he first showed up. But Big the Cat, he's my man. I like that dude. And then you got Chicago Syndicate, 1995, is basically Eternal Champions mob noir stuff. It's not a good game.
No, it's not a good game. It sucked. And
no, it's okay. It's
all right. So one of the, this is we mentioned a bunch of games we think that are worth playing. Here's one that is definitely not, and this is a something that it epitomizes everything you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
All the font work, all the text, which are sometimes important in reading, they were all this weird font, and you couldn't read it. Even at the scale that I had it at, it was just difficult. I couldn't imagine trying to play this on the Game Gear, and it was just it didn't play well. Yeah. But if you like Eternal Champions, maybe you'll like Chicago Syndicate, where they follow the story of one of the characters.
Yeah, the noir-looking character that wore a hat and a suit and stuff. Yeah. I can't remember his name, but I liked him. I played him when I played Eternal Champions.
I'm sure this is somebody's favorite game, but...
We got to do a show about the pretenders to the Street Fighter throne of the 16-bit era, you know?
Oh,
Eternal Champions is on that list.
Yeah.
Fatal Fury and those had big followings, but I don't know. It'd be an interesting discussion. We could talk.
I think that's actually a really good topic. I like that one.
Yeah, I think we should think about that.
Yeah.
All right. That's basically it. Game Gear's awesome. You should go play it. It's highly emulatable, but also, like Brian said, you can get the hardware here and there. You can get the
a lot of these games you can find. I think I want to say the Nintendo Switch has some of these and some of the Sega collections and things. I meant to take a deeper dive and I forgot about it, but I know there's a bunch of collections that some of these games show up in.
Yeah. That's the other thing is you can get those. So anyway, look for it and see what you think. Okay. It's time to guess games.
Destroy it.
We guess each other's game by a little bit of audio and a date, maybe a hint or two, and we try to see if we can guess it. So we're going to start this week with me and this little title. This is from 1990, and it was on the Game Gear.
Oh.
And so you're going to have to figure it out.
You stayed on brand.
I did this week, yeah. So here you go.
Okay, Steamboat Willie.
I mean, you know, they all kind of sound the same, these games, but any guesses? Any thoughts?
Not Mickey Mouse going on the steamboat, I don't know what it is.
It might be.
Here. It definitely feels like it definitely feels like a Disney title.
Okay. I'll give you that until you are correct. So my next hint is that yes, it is a Disney title.
Is it the one you mentioned earlier?
I don't know. What did I say?
Didn't you say Castle of Illusion?
Shit, you got it. Nicely done. Brian got it. It's Castle of Illusion. And that's me playing, and I ended up playing for two and a half hours. Yeah, because I was just going to play a little to get audio out of it.
Yeah.
Because I'll do that most of the time when I do audio. I'd rather play it and kind of see it while I'm doing it to get it rather than just go to YouTube or something. And I ended up playing this for like 2.5 hours.
That is awesome.
That's a great game. It's real good.
Yeah.
People should play it. All right. Nicely done. Brian, you killed me this week so far. Let's see how I do. Anything you can tell me about the year clip before I hit play?
Let me make sure I remember what it was. Arcade.
Arcade? What year?
It was at the arcade in 1984.
Okay.
I do remember what it was. And it was 1984. Uh-huh. It was the arcade.
Yeah.
And... I don't want to give it. Let's just go from there, and then we'll see if you some of the other hints would be like super givey.
Okay, let's find out. Here we go. Oh, I like this. That actually slaps. I like that.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. Oh, well, I know this. Gonna be annoyed. I know this.
Yeah, you do.
This isn't it's not Crazy Climber, right?
No.
Okay.
There is some climbing in it, but yeah. That little noise is probably climbing.
Okay. Oh, jeez. Hello? I don't... Hold on. All right, give me another hint. I need another hint.
What if I told you it was a Nintendo thing?
Oh, that's why it's... Oh! This is Popeye.
Oh.
Is it?
I can see where you think. I would see where you think that. No.
It's not Popeye?
Not Popeye? Popeye's not Popeye. Popeye.
Not Popeye? Hold on. So when you say it's a Nintendo thing, a Nintendo like...
Yeah, it's a Nintendo thing. How would you like to play as either...
Oh, Crazy Climbers.
No, that's a good guess, but no, not even close.
Not Crazy Climbers. Ice Climbers.
Nope, not even close.
Shit. I give up. What is it?
Well, would you like to play as a Mario or a Luigi, maybe? Would you want to...
Oh, this is just straight up Mario Brothers?
Nope, it's the Wrecking Crew, baby.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
Versus, do you remember any of the Versus?
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, the Versus Wrecking Crew. And they had this also on the NES.
Hold on. Versus Wrecking Crew.
I never played at the arcade, but I played on the NES. And I was like, oh, man, I got to play the arcade version of this.
I don't remember this at all. Oh, my gosh. What even is this game?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is real?
Yeah, this is real.
Mario and Luigi break down, designated walls to demolish buildings. Be warned, however, the buildings are home to monsters. They wander around, blah, 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 blah. I didn't know this was how have I never seen this game?
It is awesome. I didn't play it very much, but I never saw the arcade version. I would have loved to have seen it, because I did, how I got there was I started doing some research into the Versus system that they were using. No. And I was like, oh, cool, cool, cool. And I saw, I was like, oh, I think I played this on the NES. And I'm like, oh, I did. And I was like, oh, this is pretty dang cool.
Absolutely wild, dude. I have no idea.
One day we'll have to do an episode on that system. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I would. The one-up thing I always just assume is like a bunch of boards, but it's not that simple, is it? It was like a... Mm. It's different than that, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to do something kind of weird today. See if I can find it. I'm going to read an email, and we'll do it with this guy's voice. Hold on. I'm going to do this with this new thing. This is from, let's see, this is from Gabe, who sent this in. And here's what he had to say. Let's see if I can give him, here we go. All right, here we go. Whoops. Okay.
Hey, Retrographers. I was wondering if either of you had any experience with games by Pangea Software. When I was a kid, computers would come with games by them pre-downloaded. I sunk so much time into games like Automatic just because it was there, and my best friend and I started playing Power Pete when we were 8 and probably finished when we were 10. The Candyland level song still gets stuck in my head sometimes. My partner said she had a game called Bugdom that holds a special place in her heart, and lo and behold, Bugdom is also by Pangea. It seems like they did games for both Mac and Windows. The other games that were ubiquitous for kids in the 90s were games by Humongous Entertainment, especially Putt-Putt and Freddy Fish, but certainly Pajama Sam and the Backyard Sports games as well. It would be super interesting to have an episode on Pangea games and possibly one on kids games in the 90s, but that one is mostly just for me. P cheers, Gabe.
All right, Gabe. Thanks, Gabe.
I love that read. God, I feel like I was listening to an audiobook.
I know, it's
that
weird.
That was so wild.
Isn't that weird? So the stuff he's talking about, I remember all this stuff, but I didn't play any of it.
I played a good bit of Freddy Fish.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. Yeah. Yeah. But I was, you know, my kids were playing Freddy Fish and I was like, move out of the way. Let me show you how to play this stupid game.
So you showed them what for. You got in there and gave it to them.
Right. Let me show you little youngins how to play it. Like, this stupid, ooh, this is kind of fun.
Yeah. No. I remember the putt-putt things.
Yeah,
very, very vaguely. So I couldn't tell you much about them, but anyway.
But yeah, this was all over the place throughout the 90s and probably a little bit into the 2000s, right? So I mean, it definitely fits in. Freddy Fish was huge. I mean, if you can ask anybody of a certain age if they remember Freddy Fish, and they absolutely remember Freddy Fish.
All right. How about this one? This is a text. This was sent to us via 801-471-0462, and it went something like this. Like this.
I grew up with the N64, and as I got older, I always thought the graphics were awful in that early 3D era. but now I am starting to think it was how I was displaying them that was part of the problem. I think early 3D games really need to be played with a CRT to look their best, or at least on original hardware to get some of the lower quality video output it was meant for to blur lines, especially on the N64. Otherwise, with something like an emulator, the image tends to be too sharp, which makes how crude and jagged the models are very obvious. But with the blurriness of a KRT and old-school video cables, it makes things look much smoother than they actually are. Love the show, hope you guys are doing well. P.S. You guys should look into EverDrives to use on OG hardware. Got one for my 64 yesterday and I'm having a blast with it. There is definitely something to playing it on the real hardware rather than an emulator.
All right. So
agreed.
Tell me, do you have an EverDrive? Are you doing?
I do not have an EverDrive. Unfortunately, I went to purchase an EverDrive about 5 seconds after the explosion of not being able to get anything.
Yeah.
And I wanted one. I was looking at one for my Sega Genesis because I was really interested in that. But man, no, it was a super outpriced. I don't know if they've started kind of getting these back in some. I'm trying to look now. I still don't see the one for the game. Is it Game Gear one? Yeah. Get out of here. It's a Game Gear one. Look at that.
Okay.
$134. Yeah, before the madness happened, these things were like more like in the $60, $80 range, which seemed to be more reasonable. But I guess at this point, I guess $119 and up to $150 is just what it cost.
Huh.
So I should just get over it. Yeah. I should just get over it and stop remembering the good old days.
Yep.
And just accept my fate.
Yeah, take it. Okay?
Wait a minute. Now I'm seeing the Mega EverDrive X3 is $42. So maybe some of these other ones are kind of coming down.
Maybe they're getting cheaper. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, Game Boy 60. That's what I would expect to pay. That's what I would be fine with paying.
Quick note here on his point about the N64 and part of the problem being what you were displaying it on. I mean, that's a good point. If you got a crappy old CRT TV.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not great at, you know, it's not some Trinitron flat screen where you get the best possible image. You're gonna be pretty jaggy and gross on that.
This was something that used to happen a good bit. The developers were able to look at these games at a higher resolution in some instances, and they would intentionally have the lines drawn in a way that they knew that they'd be blurring with the CRT. So that was actually part of the painting process of going, what was the end user going to see? Right. And absolutely, it makes a difference. That's the reason why I have 3 CRTs in my office that I hook up my real hardware to.
Yeah.
Because it just looks good. Now, you can also emulate that as well. You can emulate those scan lines, and you can have some success here and there. Yeah. You can also upgrade to with something like a RetroTINK 5X. That costs money.
Yep.
No, it's a lot cheaper.
Yep.
Just wait until somebody throws a CRT on the side of the road and pick it up.
Yep, that's right. And if you live in the South, that's every other day. So get down there and get that
done.
There
you
go. Nicely done. Thank you all for your messages. 801-471-0462. You can even leave voicemails or texts there. Or you can send us an email, playretroshow@gmail.com, like Gabe did today. It's now time to, it's time for this. Whoops, why isn't that playing? Oh, we already did the, you know what, I'm dumb. I forgot to do this.
Welcome to the treasure.
That was for our emails, all right? I forgot to do it. What do you
there,
get
to so
do?
Just in your mind,
yeah,
play that.
I'm an idiot. Hey, don't worry, everybody who wishes we were talking about very, very retro, because next week we're going to talk about Defender, 1981's Defender.
Yes, we will not have to defend our position about retro next week, will we?
No, we will no longer have to defend her. No, we're going to, finally, Defender, the scrolling shooter game developed by Williams Electronics in 1980, released in arcades in 1981, and it is considered by many to be one of the great oldies of all time.
And a little bit, unless you have just a lot of buttons. You guys don't probably remember how many buttons were on Defender, but there was more than the one that you would play in your Atari.
Yep.
And we'll probably talk about the Atari port, too. I think a lot of people played that Defender on the Atari.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it was all right, actually. It was not bad. And I actually think it controlled better because I think there were too many buttons in the arcade game that you could much simplify these days. And they are. If you play it emulated, you'll have a better time, in my opinion, than you would then. Because they've worked out some of that stuff to be tied to your controllers today. So anyway, that'll be Defender, one of the greatest arcade games of all time. Does it hold up? Well, turn in next week and find out. In the meantime, if you like this show, like Drew Lund, Richard Neller, and Sharon McFalls, they're our latest patrons, then you want to be one of them as well at patreon.com/playretro. Signing up's easy. Learning about how it works is easy. And guess what else is easy? Getting episodes with no commercials ever and getting pre-show content every single week right there at patreon.com/playretro. It also helps us afford these silly little gadgets and things that we need to get to make the show. So please keep it coming. We really appreciate it. Your support is wonderful. Brian, I think that's everything. Do you have anything you'd like to add to this discussion about Patreon or this? Or oh, you were going to video something for patrons?
Yeah. I'm still trying to finish my 3D print. I ran into a bump and I was just trying to complete it. And hopefully I will complete that very shortly. I should have a lot more time this weekend. Foolishly, I thought the weekend before Valentine's Day would give me plenty of it's the weekend after Valentine's that I should have been shooting for.
Yeah, that's what will happen to you. But don't worry, we once in a while have a little extra of that stuff on there as well. Another fine reason to join us on Patreon. And I swear we're going to do this like...
And it's a perfect time because we're going to be heading back with this arcade stuff. And I got my GRS spinner and that's what we're talking about for video footage.
You can't do Control Defender with that, can you? With that device?
I was trying to remember there's a bunch of different layouts for Defender at the arcade. It had that cool little layout, control center type setup.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out if I could do that.
I want you to try. Mm-hmm. That's what I want.
I think I'm going to try. Yeah. It's going to be hilarious. Maybe it can. Yeah, it's going to be hilarious. Me
Defender with the wheel. Oh, my gosh. All right.
Well, that's even better.
That's amazing. Anyway, tune in next week to see how that went. That'll do it for us. Thank you all for listening. Go play something retro. And we'll see you next week.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Coffee? Tea?
Sega!
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsedis.
I'm Kayla Tsedis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.